You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
It's our weekend preview. Jimmy Conrad joins me to discuss plenty of action, including FA Cup, Premier League, Serie A, La Liga, and so much more. We also have a little discussion on the USMNT rosters, Mexico, England as well, and more. Weekend preview, Que Golazo, begins right now. Hey, everybody. Time is running out to fill your bracket and a chance to win a Nissan Rogue and a trip to the 2022 Final Four. You can compete against our podcast analysts and listeners on the CBS Sports app, or just go to cbssports.com/golazo brackets. Time is running out. March Madness is right around the corner. What's up, everybody? Welcome to Que Golazo, our weekend preview, the mammoth, the giant that is the weekend preview. And of course, Jimmy Conrad. What's up, Jimmy?
What's up, Luis? Great to see you as always. And I just want to state from the get-go that I feel like teams always want to have good vibes heading into an international break. So we're going to talk about a few games, obviously heading into this weekend, but every single game is a big game for every single team ahead of this weekend, because you don't want to limp into the international break feeling bad about yourself or losing a game. So just know that there's some underlying stakes here, I think, for every single team competing this weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's the worst thing for a fan when like your team does badly and you're just like, ugh, and now international break. It's the absolute worst. So very good point. International break, of course, next week. So this is a massive weekend preview. But before we do that, I'm going to talk Premier League. We're going to talk FA Cup. We're going to talk Serie A. We're going to talk La Liga and so much more. But before that, you know, we have, you know, hello, a former USMNT star here. Hello.
Hi.
Just look at his resume. It might take you 2 hours to read his Wikipedia, but it doesn't matter. We have to talk about it. USMNT roster. It's out. Obviously, it's just friendlies, but, you know, it's nearing, Jimmy. You know, the important games are nearing. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And, Greg Berhalter has had his time to figure out the identity. I know he's still, figuring things out, tinkering, etc. But this is the roster. As everybody can see, obviously, from, you know, the reports, if you go to cbssports.com, you can see the whole thing. But, Jimmy, I wanted your thoughts on the roster and just USMNT as they get ready for Jamaica and Northern Ireland next week.
Well, first and foremost, I wish we were playing, I say better opponents. I just feel like Jamaica, due to travel restrictions, are they going to be able to roll out a full team? I know Mikel Antonio, by the way, from West Ham, has committed to Jamaica. So hopefully he plays, because I think it'll be a good test for our back line. And I say that because I want these younger players to get tested. Now, if we take out Sebastian Legette, plays for the LA Galaxy, and Tim Ream, who plays for Fulham, even though he hasn't seen the field in quite some time. If you take out those two guys, the average age of this team is 21 years, 9 months old. And that is awesome. And that pumps me up. And the future is very bright, not only for this World Cup, but for 2026, when these guys should be theoretically heading into their prime. So I'm excited about all these guys, especially from the experience department, getting together. And we could argue, I'm gonna take that getting together part and extrapolate it a little bit, because I feel like there are a couple players within this group that are having a tough time with their clubs. You have Christian Pulisic, who can't get any real meaningful minutes, even though he did have an assist against Atletico Madrid in the Champions League. So that was nice to see. And then you have Gio Reyna, who hasn't really got going for a while, right? Kind of stopped starting, sputtering along a little bit. These guys, when you come back into the national team and have had this experience before, it's so welcoming. You're like, oh, I get to see some familiar faces. And you get to commiserate with these teammates in a way that you can't with your club teammates, because more often than not, the guys that you commiserate on your club team, at some point, if you're not playing, like, they don't want to hear it anymore. They just want to get on with it and play. And sometimes the people you're commiserating with on your club team are the ones you're competing against for playing time. So you start to grow inward, right? You're not expressing yourself in the same way. You're maybe not having as much fun because you're frustrated. But you go into your national team and you're like, oh man, this crap on my club team sucks. And you just kind of get relaxed, right? And you can get back to having fun and crack jokes. And I love that. And I think that's going to be really good and important for a few of these players, namely the ones that I mentioned and any other ones that aren't getting significant playing time. But we're also seeing Brian Reynolds get called in. He's got his first minutes with Roma not too long ago. And and him getting called into his first senior national team, that's great. So I'm excited about that. With regard to other players I'd like to see, I mean, I'm pretty happy with everybody that got called in. I think there were some that weren't allowed due to some travel restrictions or whatever. So it's, I don't want to get into speculating about that. But some of the older guys, I mean, I don't need to see Tim Ream anymore. You know, I know what he brings to the table. I'd rather see Chris Richards get a start. I'd rather see anybody else than Tim Ream. Frankly, I understand you need to have some experience in the squad and you want to have some extensions of the coach, whether they're playing or not, to kind of set the tone and what the culture is, right? And make sure that there's some players there that are going to follow through on that. But outside of that, I'm excited, man. The future is very bright. And I know that Greg Berhalter took a lot of heat at the beginning because it took him so long to take the job. And we weren't really playing particularly well, trying to play out of the back against Mexico and New York. I was there. We lost 3-0. I'm like, what are we even doing? That Zach Steffen, our goalkeeper, has more touches than our number 10, Christian Pulisic, in that game. But I feel like he, for better or for worse, or from his doing or not his doing, he's inherited a hell of a team, and the future is incredibly bright, and I think he's going to be judged on whether he can get the most out of these guys or not.
Yeah, no, well said. A few things. In terms of Jamaica as the national team, they do have a lot of English-based players coming in, but your Mikhail Antonio's, and I believe that if this is to happen, it will probably happen in June. I think that the roster right now for them is a little bit more from the guys that have already said yes to Jamaica. There's reports, obviously, of Antonio. There's Ivan Toney as well, maybe. You know, so it's going to be interesting. In terms of the USMNT, I'm Daryl Dyke. How about that, huh? You know, killing it here with Barnsley, by the way. Fifth in the championship, which is amazing. The other one I think is exciting is Owen Otazawi from Wolves.
Agreed.
So you make a good point. Just, you know, let's see these young bloods and let's see what they can do in the USMNT roster. I tweeted something yesterday, Jimmy, and I, you know, it's funny.
Do you regret it? Where are we going with this?
No, I don't regret it. I stand by it. I've actually said it to you, and I've said it to Heath as well, like a while back. The future for the USMNT is undoubtedly bright. It's just ridiculous. The talent is there. You got players playing not just in teams in Europe, but big teams in Europe. It's the identity is being created already. You can see a unity. You can see a friendship amongst the squad and everything else. That's all beautiful. But the king of CONCACAF right now is Mexico.
Of course.
And the USMNT needs to remember its past. I'm not saying that you should lay everything on this current team now on what's happened in the past. But in terms of right now, this is a blank slate. So my argument was just like, be excited, be optimistic, but also be super aggressive about your objectives, because they should all be entering that pitch every single time saying, we have not achieved anything yet. Let's see what we can do. And to me, and it should be seen not as a criticism, but as an objective for everybody.
Yeah, a challenge.
Mm-hmm. So to me, that's my whole thing. And obviously you sometimes get, no, the USMNT roster is way more talented than Mexico. It's like, that's not my point. I'm not talking about talent. I'm talking about, and you preach this more than anybody, what have you achieved yet? What have you done for me lately? And that's what their objective has to be. And that's your point about hoping that you wanted to see perhaps stronger competition in these friendlies coming up, because that's the objective. It's not, friendlies is great. You get the identity, you get the cohesion, but you haven't achieved anything. The king of CONCACAF right now is Mexico. So your objective is to dethrone them. And the only way to do that is Gold Cup, Nations League, and of course, World Cup qualifiers.
I agree with you about Mexico, and with regard to opponents, I also didn't want to throw any shade against Northern Ireland. I think they're a good opponent as well. That's not what I was saying. It's just, if we're over in Europe, why can't we schedule the big guys, you know? And I know that they're doing their own Euros preparation and World Cup qualifying and whatever else is going on for them. And even if they did play or have the opportunity, they might not, you know, Germany might not roll out their A team anyway. But those are the games I would really like to see some of our younger players get a test against as we continue, to your point, you know, forge this identity under Greg Berhalter. But with regard to Mexico in particular, any time that I felt like my team, whether it was club playing in the Champions League or with the national team, anytime we were maybe, I'd say you never sleep on Mexico, right? Or Mexican clubs, because they're a rival. But if we took them, we're too casual, those guys will eat you up. They are so cunning. They know the game so well. And I don't think that Mexican teams Well, I think they're starting to earn that respect. Obviously, Tigres getting to the Club World Cup final is in the step in that direction. But MLS teams don't get that respect either. And I think Mexican teams sometimes sleep on MLS, but I think it's for a different reason. I'm always super impressed when we played against Mexican clubs or the Mexican national team and just how savvy they are about the game. And sure, we might tick the box in terms of physicality and we might tick the box in terms of whatever it is, but they still have something about them that I always loved and appreciated. And it's just this understanding of how to win games and how to make the plays that matter in those decisive moments. And that's what I want to see for our national team is more of those games against opponents that you have to, they've taken away your option A, B, and C. Now, what are you going to do? Right. And I think when you play against teams that aren't as talented, you know, maybe they take away A, but you have option B pretty easily. Option C is there for you. And what's great about our national team is that, you know, maybe in years past, I say this as being a part of a team years past, but your option A and option B were pretty good, but maybe your C wasn't as strong. And now when we look at the depth of our roster and the talent in our roster, you know, we have A, B, and C are all really good players. So we can get out of a lot of situations. But when you play against teams that can take away A, B, and C, what are you going to do then? And I think that's where we are. And that's what we need to figure out. You know, and Mexico slapped us around when we tried to play very similar to them. They're like, yeah, we see this every day. We practice this all the time. We got our asses beat. So yeah, that, to your point, Mexico is the initial hurdle. We have to do that and show consistency in our region in CONCACAF. And then outside of that, we can start to flex on some other teams as we get more and more confident.
Yeah. But you know, be optimistic, USMNT.
Always optimistic.
I love it.
I'm drinking the Kool-Aid. I'm drunk on the Kool-Aid. But I also, you know, want to be practical about how this group should evolve, especially given their youth.
Of course. And by the way, just a very quick update. Efraín Álvarez, right? The LA born of two Mexican parents. He talked to Greg Berhalter and he's in the Mexican squad because Greg was like, listen, check them out. You've been called up. And then, you know, you make your decision. It's a very important sensitive for him topic, a very precious topic about deciding which to go to. So watch out for that one. That should be interesting. Other announcements, England announced their announcement for the World Cup qualifiers. Jesse Lingard returns to the lineup. That's pretty cool. DCL, Dominic Calvert-Lewin as well, obviously there. Ollie Watkins. This is why I'm wearing my Vela shirt. Ollie Watkins gets his call up. I am so happy for him. And I thought Konza was absolutely robbed, by the way. Robbed. If you look at the statistics, center backs in the Premier League, I think he leads right now. And no center back has done better in terms of anybody going past him. He's such a great player. I think he was robbed. But other than that, obviously, Harry Kane's in there. Jude Bellingham as well. No Jadon Sancho, I believe, obviously, you know, injured, of course. Jack Grealish as well is just getting better. But that's your England lineup. Any thoughts on that? Pretty good to see sort of Gareth Southgate leaning towards playing around with World Cup qualifiers. I mean, the games are not that difficult, right? San Marino is first, I think. So it's a good time to experiment.
Yeah, I don't have anything really to add here. There's a lot of similar themes to the men's national team here in the States where, yeah, you have some opponents, you get an opportunity to see how players play. One of the things that I wanted to mention was it's one thing to play for your club. It's another thing to play for your national team. And the young players that are playing for our national team and even the young players that are coming in for England, can you do it when it matters for your country? It's a whole different level of pressure. It's a different type of responsibility and they're different asks. And maybe some of the players that you're used to playing with at your club on a daily basis just have different skill sets. We can talk about Messi, right? Goes to when he's with Barcelona, when he starts, he's got, you know, Iniesta and Xavi and that'd be amazing. And so if Xavi and Iniesta played for Argentina, I'm sure they would have won a couple of trophies, but he goes to Argentina. It's just different. And the pressure's different. And Messi doesn't play the same way for his country as he does for his club. And that is difficult. So, you know, when I look at Phil Foden in particular, you know, Man City, it's just easier to play for your club than it is for the national team. You get in there and then all of a sudden, as long as you're not making trouble off the field by bringing girls and sneaking girls into your hotel like those guys did. But, you know, as long as they get away from that type of stuff and just concentrate on it, yeah, these guys are good as well. I don't know if England's going to win the Euros, but I'd give them a shout that they have an opportunity and a chance. And the more opportunities to Gareth Southgate's point of kind of broadening the player pool and seeing who could help you. I was a diamond in the rough, right? Nobody ever picked me out and said, oh, that guy's going to be a great national team player. He's going to help us in a World Cup one day. That was not the case. I had to kick the door down myself and get people to buy in. And I was a really, really late bloomer. So when I see national team coaches broaden the player pool, just to give that one player a look, that Ollie Watkins a look, just to see, because maybe he'll play better for the national team than he does for his club. And he's playing pretty well for his club. And I think I fell into that camp where my game elevated when I played for the national team. And in some ways, I'll be honest with you and everybody else listening, I thought it was easier to play for my national team than to play for my club because everybody was so good at their job at the national team level. I could just focus on being really good at my job and not having to worry about putting out fires for three or four different situations on a regular basis with my club that didn't allow me to be awesome at just one thing.
Yeah, no, really good point. Really good point. And trust me, as a South American, I can all but relate on players really playing with their heart out when they wear that national jersey is absolutely key. All right. Well, that was our chat. We wanted to begin with that because obviously I think it's important to begin with the USMNT and obviously everything else that's going on around the international break. All right, we're going to take a very quick break. When we come back, we are going full 150 miles an hour on the weekend preview with all your betting tips, analysis, and so much more. Stay right here. Que golazo. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss, 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Guys, watch the full length podcast on YouTube, youtube.com/Que Golazo, or you can watch on demand on the CBS Sports app on our OTT devices. Go to the CBS Sports app and scroll down until you see the Que Golazo familiar faces. Make sure that you check us out on YouTube. You can watch our beautiful faces every single weekday. What's up, everybody? Welcome back. Que Golazo, Jimmy Conrad, weekend preview. All right, we're getting into it. Everybody, take a seat wherever you are. If you're driving, make sure that you are not driving too fast.
You should be putting on another seatbelt because we're bringing you some action. Like, put on two seatbelts, everybody. Buckle up. Let's go.
Yeah, if you're on the couch, please sit up because here we go. Weekend preview. We begin.
Are you telling me people don't have seatbelts on their couches? That's crazy. Okay.
I want to see that if that's the case. All right, everybody, we begin in England. Let's go with the FA Cup and Premier League as well. So, Jimmy, I'm going to give you the fixtures for the FA Cup and you go wherever you want.
Why don't we do one? I can do one of each on these. I'm ready to go on these.
All right. Well, I'll give you the first one. Okay. Just because these two teams have already played or they have nothing going on right now, because as we are taping, of course, Europa League is taking precedent. But let's go with the FA Cup here. Everton against Man City.
Okay. So on William Hill, the disrespect for Everton is quite real, everybody. Plus 850. They're at home at Goodison Park. And William Hill says plus 850 for Everton to win. The draw is plus 440. City is minus 320. That is some heavy, heavy, heavy slanting in terms of favoritism for the boys in sky blue with Man City. But I agree with them, so it's really hard to find value in this one. Everton, God, just they played against City not too long ago. It was 3-1. And City, though that game was in the balance, Richarlison scored to make it 1-1. City, as they do, just wear you down. And eventually their quality shines through because they have so many quality players. Even the ones they bring off the bench could probably start for, I don't know, 99% of teams around the world. So I like City to win. The value I found here is Man City to win to nil. So they win and get the clean sheet plus 110. And then Man City to win both halves is plus 215. I don't know. The last time they played, it was 1-1 at half. So I could see Everton having a fight for a little while there. And Everton, you have to, well, I mean, they're balancing trying to get into the top six, top four, of course. I think more top six of conversation now. This could be that one competition that they could say, oh, we're going to try to win the FA Cup. Dude, you ran into Manchester City. You got unlucky. You guys are out. So I don't know what Carlo Ancelotti's got up his sleeve, but it's just so hard to go against Man City right now. And I think people would be like, you guys are idiots if you say Everton are going to win this. But plus 850 is some real value, Luis.
Yeah, if you want to gamble, just gamble. I mean, you know,
That's it.
That's really it. The last time they met in the FA Cup, by the way, was 80-81. So, like, you know, I don't know, take that with what you will. But they know each other, of course, very well from the Premier League. So, all right, let's move on here. Let's go with Bournemouth against Southampton, if you have something there.
I do. So I'll just give you the lines first. Bournemouth are at home. They're in the championship right now. They're in the second division for everybody that doesn't know that.
It's a South Coast derby, by the way.
So. It is. Plus 260 for Bournemouth, the Cherries, as they're known, to win straight up. The draw is plus 250 after 90 minutes. And Southampton, plus 104 to win. Now, I have to say, I really like Bournemouth in this one. They got relegated last season from the top flight, Bournemouth did. They lost their manager, Eddie Howe, the beloved manager, Eddie Howe, after 12 seasons with the club. So everybody was expecting, me included, that the Cherries were going to crumble. However, they have fought against all the odds and have made it to the quarterfinals of the FA Cup for the first time since the 1956-57 season. That's mind-blowing. And they're currently 2 points outside of a playoff spot in the championship. For everybody that doesn't know, the way the championship works, the top two teams automatically get promoted to the Premier League, and the next four play in a playoff. And the winner of those four teams gets promoted as well. It's pretty ridiculous.
That's how Villa got promoted back.
That's exactly right. So Southampton, if you guys remember, everybody was like, oh, their manager, Ralph Hasenhüttl, he's the best and all that. They are hot trash right now. They've won one in their last seven in all competitions. And that one win was against Sheffield United, who are on the bottom of the table. And if you look at the Premier League, they've only won one in their last 12. They don't have Theo Walcott, who's out due to injury. Danny Ings, who's been scoring all their goals or was when they were winning, he's out due to injury. And then Takumi Minamino, who's on loan from Liverpool, can't play in this because he already represented Liverpool in this competition. So I don't know who the hell's going to score their goals. I will say on the flip side, Shane Long, who played for Southampton, is on loan to Bournemouth. He's got 2 goals in 4 games, and he is ineligible because it's his parent club. He's not allowed to play against his parent club. So Bournemouth came off a big ass win 3-0 over Swansea, who they're competing with to get into one of these playoff spots. And they didn't just beat them. It was like 3-0. It was comprehensive. I'm going with form here. I like Bournemouth to do the business. I'm going to say 2-1 Bournemouth. And if you throw Bournemouth into a parlay with, like, let's say them and City to win, plus 494. No, sorry. If you had Chelsea to win as well, we'll get into them in a second. But if you had just Bournemouth and City to win, it's like plus 350 or something on William Hill to get that parlay. I like that a lot, dude. I'm having a parlay party over here with that one. Hopefully we hit our Europa League so we can just let it ride. You know what I'm talking about, Luis?
Absolutely. I'm kind of with you on many things here. By the way, Che Adams has been not too shabby himself. He might do something for Southampton, but I'm going with a Bournemouth win here because I tell you what, I'm drinking the Jonathan Woodgate Kool-Aid. Remember a few weeks ago, Tyrone Ree maybe was going to go to Bournemouth, but no, Jonathan Woodgate took over way before that as interim. They hadn't given, it was like an Ole Gunnar Solskjaer kind of situation. They hadn't given him a permanent gig. He now has it, and they've been doing well, as you said. And I just think because it's a derby and, like, because, you know, the South Coast rivalry, and to your point about Minamino not playing is big. Because he's a super creator here. And Danny Ings, of course, Theo Walcott. So, yeah, why not? Let's roll the dice. I love it. All right, here we go. Let's keep going here. Let's stick with the FA Cup. Chelsea, Sheffield United.
Yeah, let's do it. So, Chelsea, heavy favorites, minus 390, even bigger favorites than Man City. But at least they're at home in this one. Plus 470 for the draw, plus 1,100 for Sheffield to win. That's not going to happen. We all know that. But Chelsea win, though. This is my big bet here. Chelsea win in under 2.5 goals, plus 260, and I'm going to explain why. They had a 2-1 win over Sheffield very early on in Tuchel's reign, like his third game in charge. It was a Rudiger own goal. So technically, Sheffield didn't even score it. But that's the only time that 3 goals have been scored in a game for Chelsea with Tuchel in charge. Chelsea have not scored 3 goals themselves in any of Tuchel's 13 games. So I like this value a lot of Chelsea winning and under 2.5 goals, plus 260. And because, listen, let's be honest, if they can hold Atletico Madrid, who have some terrific players on their team, to 0 goals over 2 legs, a poor Sheffield team who just lost 5-0 on the weekend shouldn't be a problem, right? But I maybe just jinxed it. Chelsea are going to win this one straight up, but that is really good value, to be honest. Chelsea win at under 2.5 goals plus 260. I don't think this manager, I don't think this team is going to give up consecutive big game, like a lot of goals. And honestly, Chelsea don't create a lot. And I think this one's going to be tight. Sheffield, you know, this would be the biggest win of their season. They're going to get relegated. So, you know, this is really it for them. This is their Super Bowl, to find a comparison to some American sports, but this is it. This is their World Cup final.
Yeah, I wonder what it is, Jimmy, if you add Christian Pulisic to score, because I feel like he'll start in this one, you know. It's an FA Cup game. They might rotate a little bit. I know that there's an international break right before this, but still, you would think that Tuchel will be like, all right, boys, let's see what else you got. And Pulisic could start, maybe, no?
He could. It's hard to find. Oh, actually, let me look. You keep talking, because I actually do know where on William Hill where I can find that.
Well, the only thing that I was going to say about Chelsea is that because Tuchel might rotate a little bit, you could see even more so your call about making this under 2.5 goals, just because Sheffield United, this is their only thing they can really go for. They're going down. They have no permanent manager right now. Chris Wilder leaving, of course. This is their last hurrah this season.
So what do you think the final score is going to be? And then I'll tell you. Like, because if you have 2-0, basically, if you have 1-0, 2-0, 2-1, or 3-1, I can get you a line on Christian Pulisic.
Honestly, scoring. I have Sheffield United scoring a goal, so I have it 2-1 to Chelsea.
So 2-1 to Chelsea, your best bet then is Christian Pulisic to score and Chelsea to win 2-0, 2-1, or 3-1. That gives you a couple options there, plus 550.
We'll see. There you go. You never know. Even if Pulisic doesn't start, he'll play, and then, you know, maybe he gets a goal. You never know. Maybe. All right, we got Premier League games as well. Oh, sorry. Leicester City play Man United in the FA Cup. But as we're taping, Leicester City's out of the Europa. So it's more about United, because United have to play Milan. So,
I have on this. I think this one is going to go to extra time. It's Leicester City plus 190, plus 255 for the draw, which I like, plus 135 for United to win. Just because Leicester don't have a midweek game. United are obviously traveling to Italy to have to go do something that to balance the squad. United actually have shown that they can deal with this adversity and have done it consistently, I would say. But there is something about this Leicester team. This past weekend, they were very good. They have lost Harvey Barnes, who's got 9 goals and 4 assists so far in the Premier League, and James Maddison, 8 goals and 5 assists. Both of those guys are hurt. And they drew 2-2 in the same stadium back in December, if you guys remember. But this past weekend against Sheffield, so take it with a grain of salt, Jamie Vardy, Ilya Nacho, and Iosi Perez combined to incredible effect. Ilya Nacho had a hat trick, his first ever in the Premier League. There is something about this threesome, the first time that Brendan Rodgers has really tried it. And I think they're going to cause United some problems. I really like that the way that they move. Vardy can obviously stretch. Ilya Nacho can hold up the ball. And Perez is very good at combining and shooting from distance. So it's like a nice little triangle here. I'm surprised that it took Brendan Rodgers this long to maybe trust these three. But they're vibing right now, right? And I'm taking that into consideration. So I don't think that Leicester will out and out win. But I think it will go a draw after 90 minutes. And then an extra time, it's a coin flip, you know? But I think it'll be tight, or it could go to penalties. I don't know. But that's how I'm feeling about that game, no matter what happens against AC Milan for Manchester United.
Yeah, no, very good points there. All right, Premier League games as well, by the way, everybody. Very quickly, Fulham play Leeds, Brighton, Newcastle, Villa, Tottenham, West Ham, Arsenal. But I know you have two to focus on specifically.
Well, so West Ham, Arsenal, obviously, and Aston Villa, Tottenham, they're playing. And I just don't want to stand up here and say, hey, you guys should bet this, that, and the other without knowing their lineups. We know that both managers like to tinker a little bit. So those games are interesting, though. I would say West Ham, Arsenal played earlier this season, second week of the season. Arsenal won 2-1. Eddie Nketiah, remember him? He scored the winner really late. Ceballos was the man of the match that game. And that was very early on, and so much so that we didn't think West Ham would be as good as they are currently. They're in fifth and Arsenal are in 10th. So nobody would have told us that after that game and week two. With regard to Aston Villa Tottenham, when I started doing my research, they haven't even played this season.
No, we haven't seen them yet.
What's even happening? So they play Aston Villa and Tottenham play twice in the next 2 months. So I'm curious to see how that goes. So
and
that,
the last time this game happened was we were 2-0. Remember last season? Mm-hmm. And then in the last second, Engels makes the mistake and Heung-min Son comes in. So it's that was fun. Anyway, but you wanted to talk more about Fulham, Leeds, Brighton, Newcastle.
I do, because it's really intriguing at the bottom of the table. So you have Fulham taking on Leeds. Fulham are in 18th, everybody, and Leeds are in 12th. So it's less about Leeds per se, even though they found themselves in the bottom half of the table. Lost 4 out of their last 6, not in the best run of form, but did get a big draw against Chelsea this past weekend. But then you have Newcastle versus Brighton. Newcastle are in 17th on 28 points. Brighton are in 16th on 29. And Fulham, as I mentioned, are on 26 points. So there is so much at stake for these three clubs in particular. Newcastle are without their best front three. Callum Wilson's out. Miguel Almiron is out. Alonso Maximin is out. They've lost 7 out of their last 9 away from home. Steve Bruce is a trash manager anyway. Yeah, I said it. And so Brighton are heavy favorites. Brighton are never heavy favorites. They're the heavy favorites in this one, minus 160. I think Brighton are going to win, but I would throw them into a parlay. It's kind of hard to know otherwise. Fulham leads, though. Fulham plus 150 to win straight up, plus 230 to draw, and plus 185 for Leeds to win straight up. Patrick Bamford did get hurt against Chelsea, but apparently he's back in the team. Fulham, though, are pretty good at home right now. They've just lost 2 of their last 8 league matches. And so, God, this is such a big opportunity for them to take on a bit of a reeling Leeds right now. So I could see Fulham getting the win, Newcastle losing, which means that Newcastle would then be in the relegation zone.
That makes
me sad. So I know these are the teams that aren't sexy, right? Nobody's looking at these teams throughout most of the season and thinking, oh, I can't wait to watch Fulham Leeds, or wow, that Brighton Newcastle's game is going to be a real cracker. But given what's at stake, these games and the energy and enthusiasm and stress and anxiety around this for the players and the staff and even the fans watching, even though they can't be in the stadium, is going to be next level. So if you're going to turn on and watch any Premier League games this weekend, these are the reasons why you should watch these two in particular.
Well, two things. First of all, can you check on me something here? Fulham Leeds is going to be a golf fest. I have no idea why I think that. I feel like it could be like 3-2, 4-3. I have an inclination to go there because Fulham need stuff. They need to go for it. And Leeds obviously is Leeds United. So I'm wondering what it is. If it's like, I don't know, over 3 goals, over 4 goals, 3.5. Because I'm telling you, there's going to be goals in this one. By the way, also, the second point I wanted to make was Newcastle-Brighton. If Newcastle, they have a game in hand, fair enough. But, you know, when you're Newcastle at this point, it doesn't matter a game in hand or whatever. But if they draw against Brighton and Fulham win, Newcastle still go in the relegation because of the goal difference. So they got to take points wherever they can get them. But I just wanted to quickly ask about the line on that one because I really feel Fulham Leeds, it's going to be a goal fest.
Okay, so who do you think is going to win? So the over-under is 2.5, and the over 2.5 is plus 100.
I feel like Fulham's going to win this.
Okay, so let me go to that. So
like 3-2 or something.
Fulham win, both teams to score.
Yeah.
That's plus 350.
That's pretty good.
It's not bad. Yeah. If you wanted to do, let me see. I think it's, if I say, let me just see, just out of curiosity here. I just got to find it. William Hill, there's so many crazy things you can bet. And I'm still bitter that I told you guys to bet Stefan Savage to get a yellow card for Atletico Madrid.
Yeah,
you got a goddamn straight red.
Well, you're never going to get over that one.
I'm never going to get over that.
Jimmy's going to be like 80 years old. He's going to be like, Savage.
No, it's not Savage's fault. It's the referee's fault.
I know, but because you're so old, that's the only thing you're going to be able to say, like, Savage.
Okay, so if you got Fulham to win and over 2.5 goals, that's plus 290. I agree with you that Leeds is probably going to score, so I'd go with the other one, Fulham to win and both teams to score plus 350.
There you go.
I'm not as convinced as you that Fulham are going to win, but because
it's just a feeling, Jimmy. It's just a feeling I have.
Well, maybe I can talk myself into it because I think Fulham can sense that Newcastle are in trouble. And the more that they put pressure on them, the more Newcastle will continue to crumble.
I think this is one of these games where I don't think Fulham is going to be, in terms of performance, better than Leeds, but I think they're going to win. Does that make sense? Because Fulham need to take a victory here. Sometimes a better team in a game doesn't win. And I feel that's going to happen. Leeds will probably be going for it. They'll be more organized. I don't know how fit Pat Bamford will be, by the way. I know he might be back, but, you know, it all depends. I think there's going to be goals. Both teams are just too vulnerable defensively.
Okay, let me give you some facts then, see if this sways you at all. Fulham have failed to score in 7 of their last 9 home matches.
This doesn't matter.
Craven Cottage. Leeds have failed to score in their last 3 matches in the Premier League.
Yeah.
Okay.
Doesn't matter. Everything
Leeds, Leeds have lost their last 3 away matches.
Yeah, see, there you go. That's one for me.
Fulham have seen over 2.5 goals in their last 3 matches against Leeds in all competitions.
That's another one for me.
And there have been under 2.5 goals scored in Leeds' last three games in the Premier League.
Okay, they're all contradictory facts right now, but I'm telling you, I'm going with my gut.
Hold on, one more. Fulham have failed to win 10 of their last 11 home matches in the Premier League.
Momentum. Stats are there to be disrupted. I'm telling you, everybody.
I love it.
Hey, but listeners, don't put that much money into it.
Yeah, we just want just throw like $5 or $10.
Yeah, and then if you win,
it does. It changes things. It's yeah. You know why? Because your pride comes into it.
Exactly.
Everybody wants to be right, and so even if it's $5 and you hit it, just that feeling of being right is where the magic is. So you don't have to put out. It's not about like saying, "Hey, I won $1,000," even though that would be pretty cool. It's just I think it's more about being right. So yeah, don't dole out too much cheddar.
Like my high school coach said to me before I was going to take the winning penalty, just go for it. And then I skived it over. But that's another story. All right. Let's keep going here. Let's go around Europe. All right. Very quickly, Jimmy. Serie A, what's going on there?
So what I find interesting is that Inter Milan has taken on Sassuolo. Inter Milan, obviously, in control of the Scudetto and the league title at this point. It's theirs to lose. There's no line on William Hill for this game. And I'm like, what is happening, William Hill? Why are you not giving me action on this game? Do you think Inter's going to win 10-0? What's the deal? So that one is interesting for me. Also, Fiorentina, AC Milan, very good game. Fiorentina starting to get a little bit closer to relegation chatter. If they continue to drop points, that could be a real scrap for them at the end. There's 11 games left in the season. Milan playing Manchester United, of course. This one's away from home. Milan, the wheels are falling off the truck a little bit. I think they just really need to focus on not the Scudetto anymore, winning the title, but just can we secure top four status? Mm. That's a tough one for me. Fiorentina, +245 to win straight up. The draw is 245 and +112 for Milan. I kind of like the draw on that. And then you got Roma-Napoli. Roma plays against Shakhtar Donetsk today in the Europa League, so it's hard to know who Paulo Fonseca is going to roll out. Mkhitaryan is injured. He's not playing in the Europa League. Will he play on the weekend? I can't really want to advise you guys on certain lines. I will say that Roma are the favorites, +160. They've only lost once at home all season, so that's something to take into consideration. +245 for the draw, and then +165 for Napoli to win straight up.
No, Chris Smalling not being around, like it's tough.
Yeah, there's a lot of issues with Roma that I'm not happy with, and I'm glad you brought up Smalling because he's been real key to their success from a defensive perspective. Just so solid, right? Just makes the plays you expect defenders to make, and you can't say that about everybody. What's really interesting about Roma-Napoli is that they're tied on 50 points in the table for fifth and sixth. Napoli have a game in hand, and they have a better goal difference, so they're technically in fifth and Roma are in sixth. So this game has a lot riding on it. And the fact that Roma have a 3-0 lead on Shakhtar Donetsk, I think they can kind of just do the bare minimum just to get out of that second tie and then really try to get everybody geared up. Lazio is 4 points behind Roma, but they have a game in hand as well. So that could get really squeaky bum time, you know, if Roma can't get a result against Napoli this weekend. And Lazio head to Udinese. This is a big week for Lazio, or the next three games for Lazio are really important because they should beat all the teams they're playing against. And Roma, they're playing against much harder competition. So we'll see.
All right. Well, what do we have in La Liga? Because La Liga is what you really want to talk about.
Oh, my God. I'm loving La Liga right now because Atleti are falling off. I mean, Atleti obviously got knocked out by Chelsea. We could argue about, you know, it's one thing I didn't bring up about this Atletico-Chelsea matchup. Atleti had to play leg one away from home. Okay. They had to go to Budapest to play and then the second one can be at Stamford Bridge. That doesn't seem fair to me. That Chelsea had a chance to stay at home, sleep in their normal beds, do all the stuff that they usually do, but that Atleti had to travel for both legs. I think that's a little unfair. Anyway, that aside, I want to see how Atleti respond to crashing out of the Champions League. As I put on the board yesterday, and as we said, I think all week, if Atleti lose in the Champions League, I think that gives them a better chance to win La Liga. Now they have to prove it, right? So they're taking on Alaves. Alaves could be the perfect opponent for them. Alaves have only won one in their last 11. They haven't won away since the end of November, but it was against Real Madrid. So take that for what it is. However, the last three away games for them, they've given up 12 and only scored three. The problem is, who's scoring for this Atleti team? They've only won three out of their last 10 and only scored 10 during that time. So things are starting to really tighten up. And I think they're starting to feel the pressure, Luis. I don't know how you, when you look at Atleti, but I can sense them, especially domestically, they're starting to feel the pressure.
Oh, 100%. And this is 18th placed Alaves, by the way. So, you know, the pressure's already gone. They have to do something here. We've already talked about it.
I'm just saying. But the line on that, minus 275, it lets you heavy favorites at the Wanda Metropolitano, their home stadium, plus 340 for the draw, plus 1,000 for Alavés to win straight up. I think there's some parlay action here if you guys wanted to look into it, but I didn't get too into the weeds. Now, the next one is Celta Vigo versus Real Madrid. Now, Real Madrid, surprisingly, are the only La Liga team left out of the final eight in the quarterfinals of the Champions League. Plus 350 for Celta to win, plus 275 for the draw. Madrid are the favorites, minus 125. However, I do have to say, Celta Vigo are on something fierce right now. They've lost just one of their last eight, with that sole defeat coming on the road to Valencia. Valencia, yeah, a little uneven, but not easy to beat at their place. At home, Celta Vigo have drawn three and won one of their last four La Liga games. Real Madrid are on a nine-game unbeaten streak in all competitions, and I think they're going to get a boost, not only from securing their quarterfinal spot in the Champions League, but also Sergio Ramos is going to be in the team. Got to get him healthy, get him a run of games. Karim Benzema is absolutely feeling it. So I like Madrid in this one, but if Celta Vigo got a result, given how well they're playing, it's Real Madrid's got to be like, oh, great, we're running into Celta Vigo, who are finally finding their feet a little bit and getting some confidence. So we'll see, because Madrid have done just enough to get results recently. And we'll see, especially against Elche last week, where they needed the 91st minute winner from Karim Benzema to win that one. Celta Vigo are playing better than Elche and are better than Elche. So if this was a draw, I wouldn't be surprised.
Everybody, shout out to Renato Tapia, by the way, Celta Vigo's Peruvian midfielder, the future captain of Peru. Huge game for this one. And Celta Vigo they tied against Athletic 0-0 before that. It was 4-3 against Huesca. Then they tied Valladolid. They just lost 2-0 to Valencia with a red card there. They can do something here, I feel. It could be interesting. But Real Madrid on a roll.
Yeah, when I look at the Celta Vigo are on 34 points. They're ahead of Athletic, right, who won the Spanish Super Cup over Barcelona and are in Copa del Rey finals both last season and this season. And then Levante, who took down Atleti over two games, you know, they have 35. Granada have 36. They're the darlings of the Europa League. Villarreal have four. I mean, they're not too far off. And for as much grief as I think Celta Vigo has gone through, they're starting to kind of find their feet, like I said. So I don't think this is an easy one for Real Madrid, and they need all the points they can get to keep pace with everybody else.
There's somewhat of an Aston Villa story, like really struggled last season and kind of picking themselves out. A little bit less than Villa, because Villa were really out there, but like they're kind of like that. But anyway, who does Barcelona have?
Dude, they play La Real, Real Sociedad. Woo. This one's tough. Plus 250 for La Real to win at home, plus 275 for the draw, plus 100. Plus 100 for Barca to win. I like that, because Barcelona haven't lost in the league since mid-December. So for all the grief and all the stuff that's going on. And then Laporta came out, the new president, and said that he spoke directly to Messi in his big meeting to everybody and said, you know that I love you. You know that we all love you. And if you have to, I'm paraphrasing, but if you have to go, we understand, but just know we will always love you. It was unbelievable. Laporta is the guy. And if Messi's going to stay, Laporta is going to be the big reason why.
Yeah. He said it himself. And in that speech, he was like, I'm going to do my absolute best to make sure that he stays. But the funniest part was the camera pan to Messi smiling. And we're trying to decipher the smile right now, break it down like it was Minority Report. Like, what did it mean, et cetera. But yes, you make a good point. Laporta, if anybody's going to be able to convince him, it's him. All right, but they're playing La Real Sociedad. And by the way,
it's tough, man.
It's 4 points differential, right? Because Atleti 63, Barcelona 59. If Barcelona win, right? If Barcelona win, they'll go, 62 points. And if Atleti lose, which they shouldn't lose, but like Keith said, anything below victories for Atletico Madrid is a major worry.
Yes. Yes. No, you're right. 100%. I do want to say Real Sociedad and Barcelona played in January. That was in the Copa del Rey, and that went to penalties, and Barcelona got through. That's how Barcelona got past Real Sociedad. So over 120 minutes, Sociedad were there. You know, and then when they played against each other in the league back in December at the Camp Nou, that was the same thing. They hung with them the whole time. When you look at the stats, like Sociedad's there. They lost 2-1, Barcelona won. Frankie de Jong has scored in both of these games, by the way. So I went on William Hill. I'm like, wow, Frankie de Jong, maybe that's just his team. He loves scoring against Real Sociedad. And of course, William Hill won't give you a line on Frankie de Jong scoring anytime, because they know what I know, and that's Frankie de Jong scoring again. But William Jose scored for Sociedad. He's no longer with them. He's on loan to Wolves, so take him out of that. But Jordi Alba and Frankie de Jong scored. I like Real Sociedad. I like the way that they play. I don't think they're the same team that they were at the start of the season when they were blowing everybody away.
And neither are Barcelona. Since losing to PSG in the first leg, they've been a much better team. So
agreed. I think this back three that they're tweaking. I just like they're starting to peak at the right time. They're starting to get some good vibes. I could see Barcelona winning the league, man. I really can. And I'm not saying that because I'm wearing a Barcelona jersey right now. And I'm an Atleti supporter, but I also love Iniesta, and I have Iniesta on the back. That's why I'm wearing it.
I mean, who doesn't love Iniesta? Absolutely.
Oh, my God. What a dream. So this one's a little tough. So all three of these games are like, man. So I think it's a parlay you could have here if you wanted to do a La Liga parlay. I don't know what you like there, Luis, and who you think is going to win out of those three. But
My heart wants to give something to Celta Vigo because of Tapia, but I'm going with a straight-up big team parlay here. Real Madrid, Atleti, and Barcelona all to win.
All right. I respect it. You want me to see what that is? What'd you say? All three of them?
Yeah, all three of them to win. But
okay, give me a second to get that up. Do you think I worry about Atleti, though. I do worry. I mean, Alaves is not good.
Yeah, they're not good. And I think that Simeone will say, listen, we're out of the Champions League, but now this is our objective. Let's go and do it. So I think, and because it's Alaves and not a stronger team, with all due respect, they'll get that win. Real Madrid are looking good. You mentioned, of course, that they're the only Spanish team now in the Champions League quarterfinals. So they're going to be good against the Celta Vigo side, who is good, but I don't think good enough to dethrone, especially as Karim Benzema is just scoring when he blinks. The toughest one is Real Sociedad against Barcelona. That's the toughest.
Yeah, that's tough. Tough. But yeah, I mean, if you go with straight wins, I think there's going to be a draw in one of those. I just don't know if it's Celta Vigo, Real Madrid, or Atleti Alaves for whatever reason, because the pressure is just too much for them, or Sociedad. I mean, I think there's a draw in there, but I respect that you go on all three wins. If that hits, all three of the big teams win, that's plus 391. That's not bad for a parlay.
Hey, if you're going with a draw, Celta Vigo, Real Madrid could be a draw. I think maybe
you can throw it in. You can have both options, a win and a draw.
Well, there you go.
But then that drops to 275. No, hold on.
That's all right.
Yeah, 270. No, that's what the draw would be. I want the parlay, dude. What's happening? Oh, they won't let you do it. So the three leg parlays, you have to have wins.
Well, just do two. Just do two separates. Just do.
Okay. So 391, and then let's do the draw and see how it goes.
Because that
jumps up to 923. Wow, that's a big jump, dude.
See, there you go. That's even better than Man City losing. Absolutely. No, see, there you go. You have so much options. All right, listen, let's finish this up now. Mm-hmm. There's a huge game in France. Ligue 1. We got PSG against Lyon. PSG in second place with 60 points. Lyon in third place with also 60 points, but obviously PSG with a better goal difference. Both trailing Lille only by a victory, only by 3 points though. So Lyon against PSG, big game. What do you have?
Yeah, this is a big game. Lyon is not the favorite, plus 180 for them to win straight up, plus 290 for the draw over 90 minutes, plus 129 for PSG. It's pretty good value. What I have is PSG just beat Lille 3-0 in the Coupe de France round of 16. So they're getting into the quarterfinals now. I thought they were no Neymar. Mbappe didn't start.
Yep.
Moise Kean is now back in the team. That's dangerous because he provides just a different look in a lot of different ways. Icardi started the game and came off after 39 minutes because of an injury. I think he's going to be okay, but Mbappe came on, drew a penalty and scored it 4 minutes later. And then his last goal was ridiculous. 90th minute, Lyon is trying to push forward and he just crushes them on the counter. It's ridiculous. That guy is so good. So when I look at that, I see a lot of things to like about PSG in particular because of what's at stake, because where these two sit in the table. Lille is still the league leaders, but these are second and third. However, these games have been pretty tight between the two. So Lyon beat them earlier in December 1-0 in Paris. In the Coupe de la Ligue, it was 0-0. Lyon also just hung with them the whole time. These last two games, I think, are really important. That was back in July, so it's been a while there. But PSG won in penalties. But that one in December is something to look at. And Memphis Depay leading the lines for Lyon. There's something to like here. I like the draw plus 290. I think both teams' consensus is an important one. So I think you and I have seen this, where when the big clubs know that this is a really important one, they get a little conservative. They don't want to stretch themselves too thin of the fear of losing. Because if they lose this one, we could argue, well, that's the 3 points that other team needed to kind of springboard them to create some distance between them and the table. So plus 290 is not a bad shout, just given how competitive these two teams are. And that's really the only line I have on it is I really like the draw, but if somebody sat here was a Lyon fan and could like probably set up, I'd be like, oh yeah, I agree with you. And then PSG fan would come in and be like, well, I agree with you too. You know, it's one of those. So this feels like a bit of a coin flip. You might just want to stay away from it. I don't know how you're feeling about it, Luis.
No, I think stay away from it. It's tough because I do like the draw, but Mauricio Pochettino doesn't really go for draws, especially in the league. But Lyon could be just as annoying, especially at home. It's very tight. It's very difficult. I wouldn't touch this one, to be honest. I'll stick with the draw. I just think from a betting perspective, get away from this one. I don't think it's worth it.
I mean, they both dropped points last week. Lille away from home to Reims, and PSG surprisingly lost to Nantes. They were up 1-0 and they ended up losing 2-1. So you can get at these guys, and you can get at that back line in particular. I just think because of that, I really believe that Pochettino is going to look at this as a bit of a Champions League type game. It's really interesting. Obviously, they beat Barcelona. They're weak last week. They beat Barcelona. They drew 1-1, right? They got them through. Then they lose to Nantes, and now they got – and then they beat Lille. And you're like, dude, which version of PSG is going to show up? So I just think they're going to tighten things up defensively. I don't think they're going to allow the space that Lille need to have success, and I think that just lends itself to a draw. I could see a – and it won't be a 0-0. I could see a 1-1 potentially. These two teams usually play it pretty tight.
Yeah, one more caveat to add, by the way. Memphis Depay is out of contract in June, and Lyon obviously wants them to stay, but this is just one of these games where Memphis Depay could be like, look, world, look what I can do once again. So
he's 27. I mean, he's got one more big move in him, I think, before he hits the wrong side of 30.
That's what I think. So that's another thing to add. Hey, but that's it. That's our weekend preview. You cannot complain, everybody. We gave you everything.
The goods.
Everything. Just like Catherine Hahn says in Ron Burgundy, everything. We gave you everything. Jimmy Conrad, anything to add before we say goodbye? By the way, we're coming back to you when the Champions League and Europa League draw is quarterfinals and the semifinals as well on Friday. But any final thoughts for today?
No, you took the words out of my mouth. I'm really excited for that draw because I think it's going to really dictate the future of a lot of the clubs that we talk about pretty regularly.
This is the best round, the quarterfinals, because now this is like the creme de la creme. I feel like that's what it is. Jimmy Conrad, thank you so much, brother.
Thanks, Luis.
Hey, everybody. I want to thank Jimmy Conrad for joining me today. Don't forget, on Twitter, we are on Que Golazo Pod. We are also on YouTube, youtube.com/Que Golazo. We're on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts. Please leave a rating and review. It helps us to grow the show. We're on cbssports.com and so much more. Have a great, great weekend.
New CBS Monday.
Federal agents.
Here's where we can see them.
NCIS Hawaii is back. About to set it up. New criminals to catch.
Armed robbery, aggravated assault, murder.
And new investigations to be solved.
These guys were good, but even masters make mistakes.
Vanessa Lachey and featuring LL Cool J.
Violent Island, you got it.
Welcome to paradise.
A new NCIS Hawaii, Monday, 10/9 Central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.